Good afternoon. Welcome back. This is the second hour of the Weekly Property Show. Well, we're also joined by Ludmila Yamalova, managing partner with Yamalova and Plefka Legal Consultants. Good afternoon, Ludmila. And Mike Small of VSM Consulting. Good afternoon to you. Now, just before we get back into the stories for today, I'd like to give you another reminder of the competition. In fact, we've got two competitions running this afternoon. One already we've been talking about, which is to win an iftar for four people over at the Ritz-Carlton DIFC, which is a wonderful venue over there. It's the Ramadan Majlis at the DIFC, the financial centre. There's an air-conditioned terrace as well and live entertainment. So if you'd like to win an iftar giveaway for four people at the Ritz-Carlton DIFC, just text in the name of the hotel with your name on 4001. I'll pick a winner at the end of the programme. And also, we have another giveaway, which is for a nice relaxing wellness spa and pool pass. It's in fact for the Cleopatra Spa and Wellness at Woffy. We've got a voucher for a Cleopatra Spa and Wellness, including an Elemix facial, a massage and two passes to their pool. Just text in the word Cleopatra, 4001 again, is the name of the number, and I will pick a winner at the end of the programme. Again, just a quick reminder, but do put your name on all of those messages. So, back to
Europe. Well, let's relate it to property now, and let's relate it to some of the reports coming out in Europe of property, because all of these macro issues, and that's my job, affect property markets. That's the nature of it. So when we look at Holland, for instance, and Holland's a country that hasn't really been in the news in all this debate about the EU. It's a very neutral country. It tends to keep below the radar and just do what it's told. It's much like Britain in a way. It does what it should, and therefore some people aren't happy with the EU, some are very neutral. But when we look at a report that came out, there's a 70-page report out this week by ABN, and it's a super report. It has an enormous depth. And I went to the property section of it, and I looked at their views on property, which is that they see a 14% fall this year and a 13% the year after that.
So you're in the UK?
This is Holland.
Holland.
Yeah, in Holland. Right, yeah. This is in Holland. But they also say, and this is the point I made on here about a month ago when I said to you, did you notice that Dutch retail sales were not down 0.1%, not 1.1%, but 11% in 1 month? 11%. And what they did was they did a sensitivity analysis to demonstrate the impact of saving on the consumption by Dutch households. And this is a big thing that I've been mentioning on here a lot, Siobhan, that when you get a debt crisis, which is what we've got, and when you get too much debt in balance sheets, people save. So debt is the cheapest it's ever been in history, but people don't want it. It's just psychological. They do not want debt, so they want to repay it. And I talked on here 2 weeks ago about the fact that people in Australia, UK and US were all paying off mortgages faster than they needed to.
Wow, okay.
Yeah? So when they got an interest rate saving, it didn't mean they had more money. They literally just kept the repayment the same and in fact did lump sum payments whenever they could. Mm-hmm. So the amount of mortgage debt is going down quite fast. Not fast enough, but faster than it could. Why? Because people want rid of debt because they've seen the damage it's done.
Right.
So when you look at this Dutch, what does that mean to the economy? Well, when people save, quite clearly there's less money being spent, because it's just by definition, you've got X at the start. If you save more of X, you've got less to spend of X. So this report from ABN comes out. It says it's most likely that households will cut consumption of non-essential items such as fashion, furniture and leisure, which make up 69% of total consumption. When assuming a household takes 20 years to recover the losses, it has to cut back annual discretionary spending by 2.7% if they want to recover $102 billion. It requires a cut of 6.7% per year to recover the extended impact today of $258 billion. So that's an independent report written by AMRO Bank, ABN AMRO Bank, 70 pages, a lot of research. They think that it requires a cut of 6.7% in discretionary spending over 20 years to get the economy back into balance.
Mm.
Yeah. So again, but what effect does that have on house prices? Well, clearly, it takes them down. Because if people have less money to spend, they will not go out there bidding ever higher prices for the same property. So again, you see, this isn't just an isolated thing, this EU thing. It's a very, very far-reaching, it affects every part of anyone in Europe's life, and it will affect property prices. It will bring them down.
And have you seen this story that was in the Gulf News? It says London Realty can expect a post-Ramadan rush from Middle East investors. I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, I don't suppose they're wrong. But they ought to look before they do and run smack into what's called the Osborne Mansion Tax. Because an awful lot of people have been buying London property in the belief that there is no tax for expats, there's no tax for non-residents, there's no tax, no tax, no tax. That is all going to change, and it's going to change massively. And there, and an awful lot of people in Dubai, I've seen, marketing properties to be bought through companies. The Osborne tax proposed at the moment is a 15% stamp duty on anything that is bought by non-natural persons. So in other words, if someone buys it in a company name or a partnership, including a company or a collective investment vehicle, i.e. a fund, there will be a 15% charge, tax charge, on that purchase.
Okay.
15. So to make money, you're going to have to make at least 20% on the property.
And that's from any country?
That's from,
if
yes,
you're a non-resident.
It's UK property. It's property above £2 million.
Sorry, I missed that. But you're saying that's for non-residents?
For non-natural persons. In other words, a lot of people have been trying to hide from tax by buying it through an animal, through a vehicle,
right.
Whether it's a company or a partnership with a company or a Cayman company or a fund. However they wanted to dress it up to avoid the stamp duty, they've done that. What the government's proposing now, and again, try and bear with me here, this problem affects every country in Europe. So every country in Europe now are going to clamour over their tax laws and try and find ways to get more tax. They need it. They're not being nasty. It's not personal. They need a lot more tax. So they're going to hit anyone they can with more tax. And let's face it, it's a lot easier to hit someone who's coming in and buying a property than it is to hit a poor person living in your country.
So would they tax non-residents, for example, you or I, if we wanted to buy?
Yeah, it's going to be a stamp duty, yes.
So is it like a one-time tax when you buy a property?
It's going to be a one-time, but then there is talk also of having an annual tax, which is what the French do as well. So again, you see, the whole world is changing. And this is what I've tried to say on here, I suppose, for 3 years now. The whole world is changing. And if you try and play the game that you played in the 80s and the 90s and the early noughties, in the late noughties and early teens, you're going to have a shock. Because the whole rules of the game are changing. The whole macroeconomics are changing. And that's what we try and get over to our clients, is you're in a new world. Do not try and play the old game.
But do you think this is a good idea, though, the tax? I understand they're trying to get money from somewhere. But as we know, I mean, the property market and the investment from overseas into, for example, the UK is extremely valued. I mean, particularly from this part of the world. It keeps it buoyant. It keeps those prices high.
Do you want high prices? Why does everyone think you need high prices in a property market? That just stops people buying property.
No, but I'm saying in certain very select areas in the centre of London, then yes, I think so, because it's not just about the prices of property, it's about the people that come there, who spend money in the country, who spend a fortune probably going shopping, dining, drinking, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
If that pollutes the whole economy, such that people, ordinary people, can't buy a property, which it has done, which was what we did, didn't we, over the last 10, 15 years, we allowed, in all economies, almost, property prices to just race out of control. We gave 95% loans. We gave 120% loans. We gave loans for anything. People could borrow as much as they want and spend as much as they want on a property because the banks let them do it.
But Mike, I mean, if the properties become more affordable for more people to buy, then we need more properties and we need more construction.
And then you've got a growth of an economy, haven't you? As opposed to the death of an economy when you've got high property prices and no one can buy anything.
But it's still a free market, though. So, I mean, the property is a supply and demand, isn't it?
You can have a free market, Siobhan, but as you know and I know, in any market, you can have freedom to certain things, but you've got to bring in regulations at some point to stop that freedom allowing the rich to get extremely rich and the poor to get ever, ever so poor. And that's what's happened, isn't it? Because now people can't afford a property.
But how do you regulate, then, the buying and selling of property? You can't pay more than for a townhouse in the centre of London in one of the top areas. Sorry, but you can't pay more than so many.
No, you put a tax on to make sure that people pay a fair tax, and therefore there is a cost to buying that sort of property. Now, then people make the decision again. Do I buy it or do I not now?
That has been a standard and long practice in the U.S.
Absolutely.
I mean, the more so, the more desirable areas always have a higher tax. And we talked about it in the last show, but there is an annual property tax for every property. Right. And depending on the city, if you're from San Francisco, you pay a much higher annual tax rate. And it's annual.
And has that impacted the overall house prices, though, in that it's sort of regulated it somewhere or other?
I think it sort of inevitably regulates it just because it's not as lucrative, without much of a sort of expense as it may be, for example, in those countries like London, for example, or in those cities where, you could just buy and not have to pay anything for anything. I mean, in the U.S., you have to pay the initial registration fee, then you have to pay annual tax, and then you have to pay tax on all your rental income. And from what I understand, if you're an expat or a non-resident in England, you don't need to do that. So you can imagine sort of the amount of revenue that it generates in the U.S., all these different sort of tiers of tax.
I suppose there's possibilities of that sort of fear or trepidation of introducing these sorts of taxes, and the outcome. I mean, will people just go elsewhere and go, well, it's not worth my while now?
Well, in some ways, that's good, because in some ways you need the economy to come down to a level that is sustainable. The word is sustainable. Prices are not sustainable when they get out of hand and they get ridiculous, because then what happens is you get ridiculous banks lending ridiculous amounts of money to people who can't pay it back. It's called subprime.
Yes, but I don't think, you're talking about sort of more of a mass market, but these sort of properties we're talking about, the over 2 million mark, I mean, this is more high end. This is a very different sort of market.
But it's
mortgages and so anyway, no. And certainly probably not with banks in England. So,
no. So what you're going to get
much of an effect is it really going to have?
Well, again,
in the general economy,
it's not going to have that much other than sentiment. Sentiment is massively important in any economy. Sentiment drives an economy. Sentiment is what makes people spend or not spend, or save or not save, or buy property or not property. It's sentiment. And what you're going to do is you're going to try and take out this ridiculous get rich quick, the rich can do what they want, doesn't matter about the poor, we don't care about the poor, as long as the rich do this. There's been a culture over the last 10 years where in America, particularly with the Bush tax cuts, etc., which is obviously what's being fought now, and the fiscal cliff is coming up as to whether they get extended or not for everyone or not, you've got this horrible situation where the rich have had 10 or 15 years of manipulating the system through law, through legislature, through banks, of being able to extend their wealth at the cost of the real economy. So the real economy is beginning weaker and weaker and weaker, while the rich... Now, then, of course, what do the rich do? Now, the American system would say, the rich, that's great, give the rich more and more money because they will invest. But they don't, do they? They don't invest in businesses, they invest in emerging markets, or they invest in commodities, which then drives the price up for the poor again.
It's an interesting text come through from Susan. Thank you for that, Susan, who says, it's not a free market if banks make loans they know can't be repaid, as Mark says, because house prices are now so out of control. People who can afford to buy have so little down that in the end they are better off investing in index funds or in bonds. Fair, good point, but, you're blaming the banks again, that they say that they're giving loans that can't be repaid. But surely the person who's asking for the loan should know if it can be repaid or not.
Ah, so Siobhan, come on, let's put one side. Let's have a boxing match between.
Put responsibility onto the banks.
Match between the banks and their multinational, multi-layered legal and marketing departments versus an individual. Let's have a boxing match and see who wins.
I don't agree fully with that at all, Mike. I think if you're a responsible individual feels that they're responsible enough to own a house and has a job, etc., then,
And you receive 8 texts a day telling you that you can have a mortgage, you can do this, you can do that, you can do this, you can do that. You have about 8 a day from a bank. And you know what? As an individual,
I haven't bought a property.
Have you
bought one?
Where?
Here.
Yeah, well, not here, no, but I bought one in England, and I... Yeah, but
completely blame the banks.
So you're going to say that anyone with a degree or anyone who's had a lot of benefits from education and anyone who's had a great system and a great life can make a decision. But what about the people who can't? You've got to defend them. You've got to. You can't have a system where those who are privileged can determine what those who aren't privileged do and don't do.
I bet you they drive cars and have a job and have children.
Yeah, well,
so what you're saying?
That's
you can't,
a different. That's
you can't
a different
have
argument.
It. You can have a loan. You can have children because yeah. you're responsible enough to have a child. But I'm sorry, you're not responsible enough because we don't think you're clever enough or smart enough for us to give you a mortgage.
No. I don't think that's what I think what Mike is saying, and I think. You know, we tend to believe that they're experts in certain fields, and we look to them for the expert advice. So, for example, you know, let's say you're a school teacher. I mean, what do you really know about finances? What do you really know about banking?
Do your research. I mean, it's all out there.
Sure. But, I mean, let's face it. If you're a school teacher, you're still not a banker. And when you sit there at the table, you know, and then you got with a banker, and
you
the
see,
banker is telling you,
you know how
you
much
can.
Money you've got.
Yeah, but if the banker
is
telling
you, this
is
how much I earn. This is how much my mortgage is. This is how much my repayments
are.
But,
you know, I've been
figure it out.
But I've been, you know, in those sort of discussions where the bank, you know, the banker is telling you, you know what, you're making enough. Don't worry about it. You'll be able to repay. We've got a whole sort of, you know, we've got decades, if not, you know, a century of expertise and experience behind us. And, you know, don't worry. You can repay it.
House prices never go down. So buy.
Look.
You can take 180% loan. Doesn't matter.
And I think at some point, just people want to believe that when they're talking to an expert, when they're talking to a professional.
Yes, I'm sure they do. I do agree with you, and I'm not saying that they're not completely blameless. Absolutely not. However, what I am saying is that you can't, I don't think, completely blame the banks for everything.
Right.
There has to be some kind of responsibility on the individual themselves.
Well, let's go back to the
80s. It goes back to this whole sense of the nanny state, and we have to be looked
after. No. We don't have to go there.
Blame
that's black and white.
Else
what you're
for,
doing, Siobhan, is you're doing the modern argument that everything is black and white. There's a heck of a lot of grey in between.
Oh,
it is not yes or no.
Never ever black and white.
Let's go back to the 80s. Let's go back to banks only lending 2.5 times on 1 time salary and tell me what house prices were and tell me that people who could afford to live on one wage can now only buy the same house on 2 wages and overtime and bonuses and extra time and they need to borrow as well. We're mad. We've driven a market into the stratosphere so that we both have to work, we both have to work very hard, and we still haven't got enough money to buy enough, and that's why the rest of the economy now, let's go back to the economy, is not surviving, because there's not enough money left in the economy to buy goods, because it's all tied up in house loans. Mm. That's the problem, that's what the West is suffering from.
Ding, ding.
There we go.
Right, let's take a quick break, let's go to round 2. Stay with us.